Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Game Day, your verdict.
Well, we may not have had much football today, but that doesn't mean TalkSport turns off. We've had some great stuff on today's shows. Tony Cascarino and Jordan Jarrett Bryan spoke to journalist Tony Evans, who's not hopeful that football will return anytime soon. Laura Woods gets dating advice from Stuart Pearce. Sam Matterface and Perry Groves found out what happened when football last stopped with historian and author Richard Foster. And me, Lindsay Hipgrave and Darren Bent debate who is in the Premier League team of the year so far. This is a slightly different Your Verdict podcast. Let's get into it and join Laura Woods and Stuart Pearce.
Right, so we're going to focus now on this little section here about what happens now with football, because ultimately there are so many different suggestions of what is going to happen with this Premier League, and not just the Premier League, the lower leagues as well in the footballing pyramid. But for now, Stuart, we know that all football has been cancelled, pro football, until April the 3rd. You and I individually have been speaking to lots of people that we know in the game.
Yeah.
You've actually gone and spoken to managers. I've been speaking to people. I'll tell you a little bit about what self-isolation is in a moment, and about sort of in and amongst the teams that are being self-isolated, what that actually means. How realistic do you think it is, Stuart, that football is going to be cancelled for the rest of the season? They won't be able to play this out.
I think that's more realistic than it actually getting started again, personally.
Wow.
I hope I'm wrong. But the biggest problem is, and I try to put myself in that situation, when you're a manager or a coach, trying to tick players over with nothing at the end of the week is terrible. Honestly, when you've got no focus at the end of the week, it's so difficult. We've got a situation and a date that's put in front of the football industry now of the 4th of April. I don't think anyone, if they put their hand on hearts, thinks that the game's going to go ahead on that date, you know? So what is the situation accordingly from there? It's difficult. You've got to make sure that the players are match fit for that date, knowing full well in the back of your mind that probably that date won't be the start date anyway. So that is the most difficult thing. And try to tick your players over and also give them a break as well is so, so difficult to do, you know?
Have you ever been in a situation, not like this, because I can't imagine anything that's ever happened that is similar to this in the world of football, but in our lifetime especially. But have you ever been in a situation where you're either a coach or a player and you are training for a game that's a dead rubber or something like that, or there's really a lack of motivation for it?
I think if you ask any player that's played in a third or fourth place playoff in a major sort of World Cup or something like that, that is definitely one of those, you know, where you sort of emotionally you fall off the edge of a cliff because you've lost a semi-final. This is probably the nearest thing I can think that would replicate that in a mental approach, where you're training but you have actually got a game at the end of it, but it's a game where you think, well, what's the point in many ways, you know? But apart from that, no, foot and mouth with horse racing a few years ago. I seem to remember that, you know, that was a little bit start and stop, will it, won't it type scenario. This is the nearest thing we've had to that.
So what does it mean when you're self-isolating? So this is, we know that some teams, and it's not just football, it's other sports as well, are being told to go in and self-isolate. And how do they keep themselves fit? I was speaking to somebody in a club and within it that is self-isolating at the moment. And ultimately what they're being told is they can't leave the house. So you can't go for a run. And if you were to go for a run, don't go on busy high streets. So if you really feel like you've got to go out, don't go on busy high streets, don't go somewhere where there's a lot of people, like gigs, Stuart. Getting exercise bikes apparently deep cleaned and sent out to all the players. So when we're talking about this, it's to keep them healthy and keep them fit, keep their exercise levels up. So if they don't have any in their house already, they will be sent exercise bikes. They'll sit on there and they'll be expected to keep themselves fit. They're also being given extra nutritional advice, and that's to cut calories, so they're not sitting at home, nothing to do, watching TV, playing FIFA or something, and eating their way through to a couple of extra sizes in the older clothing. It's crazy, really, when you think about it, isn't it? This is what they have to do. This is what players at top tier have to do.
Yeah, but bear in mind, this is top tier. It drops off very quickly after that. So what do the players in the lower leagues do as well that have got a similar type of thing?
Well, you're not privy, are you? Not always privy to being sent something like an exercise bike and specific dietary requirements to stay healthy and stay fit. I mean, I think I'd be climbing the walls if I was encouraged to sit at home and do nothing, which actually is what I do on my days off, to be quite fair. But it does open you up to a completely different world with so many different questions. It's quite interesting as well, because this is the first weekend this is happening. Mm. Imagine by week four. I'm not saying that you're going to be isolated for 4 weeks, but as much as this goes on, and what you were just saying about players being motivated, they get to the point where they can't play for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, Stuart.
Yeah, or alternatively, I mean, a decision will have to be made on the Euros as well. I was just thinking of someone like Harry Kane, if you like. If Harry was being pushed, comes to shove about not being fit, I would suggest that any player really, and include Harry in this, will be delighted that, you know, that he's got a timescale on whether to get fit this summer, or alternatively, you know, it'll be a breath of fresh air if he wasn't going to be fit this summer.
Clubs like Aston Villa, so a situation like this where you've got Aston Villa, who've got a number of injuries, but especially one John McGinn, that they were hoping to have him back for the League Cup final, he wasn't quite there. I mean, surely, I don't want to make light of a situation, but surely they must be sitting there thinking, OK, right, this buys us a bit more time.
It's not making light of it. I used to be like it as a player. Mm. If I was injured and our game got cancelled on Saturday, I was absolutely delighted because it ticked off another game I wouldn't miss, you know? Mm. So, and the same will apply. The fact, if the league does get started in whenever, the dynamic of which team would have been relegated might all change, you know, in regard to what players are available, like you've just mentioned, what players won't be available at the time. And I tell you, the one thing I wouldn't want to do, we all look at sort of the governing bodies of everything to make decisions. Whatever decision they make on relegation, promotion, who wins the league, if the league doesn't carry on anymore or not, does it get cancelled? Horrible decisions to make, aren't they? You cannot please everybody in this scenario.
That's the thing, Stuart. This would be the worst job. The worst job. If you're at the top and you're in that organisation and you're the one that has to decide what happens here, it's an absolute minefield, whichever way you look at it. You also could look at it, and when we talk about players coming back from fitness, what about managers whose jobs are under threat? Mm. So this weekend, managers that might have had a crunch game that now are being afforded a little bit more time too.
Mm. Well, there's certain teams in this scenario. If you're mid-table and you're comfortable on points and that type of thing, you don't mind this break. It's not a problem for you. If you're Aston Villa or you're Bournemouth or whatever, you're in a state of limbo, and that state of limbo, you're in a high pressure state of limbo basically, because you know when football starts, if it starts again, you've got to make sure that your team are firing on all cylinder, because you have not got chance to lose a game or two because you've not prepped your team well enough.
Game day, your verdict on Talk Sport.
There's a lot of talk about whether football is braced for a possible total shutdown until September even, which could leave many companies and individuals fearing for their future. We're going to speak now to Tony Evans, journalist and sports broadcaster. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Tony.
I'm Jordan. How are you today?
Very, very good, my friend. Very good. You've written an article, Tony, where you talk about you've been quite critical of the Premier League's reaction to the coronavirus. Tell us a little bit about why you were so critical and what you think the Premier League should have done.
Well, I think I'm going to go so far as to say being critical of them. What the Premier League did, and all the football authorities did, all week, is follow the government's advice. And the advice was to carry on. And they thought to get at least another week out of it, certainly get the Monday night game over the Merseyside derby, and then possibly next weekend's games. And then on Thursday afternoon, things changed pretty drastically because there was a call was made from the Cobra meeting in London, the government crisis meeting, which was basically we're not telling the football authorities, well, we're not sure we've given you the right advice. It might be an idea to shut down. And then on top of that, the Arteta situation happened on Thursday night. And suddenly everyone was into full-on crisis mode. The Premier League wanted to continue playing behind closed doors. But the fact that players began testing positive for the coronavirus that meant that wasn't going to happen. And suddenly we were into a situation where someone who was involved in the meetings this week said to me, it's absolutely ludicrous to believe that it'll be back next month, football. They believe that it'll be at least September before the game is. But no one's prepared for it. There's been no planning for it. And suddenly, we're facing, for a lot of clubs, oblivion.
Mm. Tony, what happened abroad was quite clear, that they went through a stage of coronavirus, then spectators weren't allowed to go and watch games. Football was like Italy, and we've seen in other countries, continued. And then there was, obviously, now the lockdown is happening. So do you think the reaction was too quick before, you know, no spectators and then a lockdown?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some sort of muddy thinking going on the continent. I mean, did you see the crowds outside the PSG Dortmund game, which was played before no spectators? But there are absolutely thousands of people running around the Stade de France, and so I mean, there was a sense that by football in general, by doing things piecemeal and not coming up with a coherent strategy, have sort of got it wrong a little bit. I mean, UEFA are meeting on Tuesday, and they're going to have a conference call with all the game stakeholders, and to see what they're going to do. But hopefully, what they'll have is an overall plan for the entire game. Because what you can't be doing is, say, for example, if we don't get any football till September, the Premier League decide to finish this season, September. And then you've got Serie A who say, OK, well, we'll just call it a day and, you know, we won't award, because they're talking about no award and a title, and just people in the positions that they're in now, we'll get the European slots. And if they did that, and suddenly all the leagues will be out of sync, whatever happens, someone needs to come up with a coherent plan so everyone is doing the same thing, so the game can go forward together.
Tony, you mentioned the PSG game, and we saw that obviously behind closed doors, and we saw the fans outside the stadium, and that there's been advising that that's just in some way almost worse than letting fans in to watch the game. But I also found it quite equally weird that Liverpool decided to allow 3,000 Madrid fans into Anfield for that game as well. That for me kind of really illustrated, I don't know what individual clubs can do, because if you say on one side one game is behind closed doors, that's better for people's safety, and then another club says, well, we'd rather them inside the stadium than congregating outside. Do you have a bit of sympathy for the clubs in terms of, do we follow the leagues, do we follow the government's advice, what to do and what not to do?
Very much so, because certainly up until Thursday the government was saying that the one thing that was imperative is that clubs didn't take individual action, that everyone had to do the same thing and follow government advice. Now, that began to break down. In Scotland in particular, the clubs were saying, well, we think we need to act. So, there was one of the people involved in the talk said to me that the mood amongst all the clubs is pretty upbeat and positive. What they were really looking for all week was guidance and someone who could give them a proper strategy. And as soon as they got that, I think everyone felt a little bit better. At the moment, I think there's a broad agreement within the game. Now, what will begin to happen, that will begin to fracture next week, because there are certain clubs who have different agendas and they want different things. I mean, there are a number of Premier League clubs who'd like the season declared null and void now and start again in for next season as if it was last season, which obviously Liverpool won't be very keen on that. But say, for example, the likes of Tottenham would, because they'd be in the Champions League. And so we'll get that sort of backbiting going on the next week or two. And then, of course, when it begins to dawn on the Football League clubs that how a prolonged layoff is going to hurt them financially and how many of them will put in the very existence in danger, I think we'll begin to see everything unravel and infighting starting left, right and centre.
And Tony, look, there's going to be no fair solution for this. That's quite clear. There's going to be many teams that feel that they're hard done by. I sympathise, and me and Jordan talked about this earlier, about clubs lower down the pecking order that are fighting for existence. And the Premier League will survive. There isn't an issue for long term for Premier League. They will be OK. It might affect their transfer budgets, what they can do, you know, for targets for next season. But down the ladder, it's a much more serious, you know, consequence.
Well, yeah. I mean, the major problem for Premier League clubs is for players that are out of contract and whether the transfer window will actually open. Because, I mean, clearly, if we're not going to have any football, if we're going to restart the season in September, what do you do? You can't really have people moving about. So that'll be for them. But for smaller clubs, the cash flow situation is going to get really drastic very, very quickly. You know, it's Premier League clubs, the match day income is a shrinking proportion of overall revenue, so it doesn't matter that much. I mean, Villa might have an issue because of their overspending in the Championship in the Football League, but most of them will be okay. But for clubs lower down the pyramid, well, you know, they've got to pay wages and there's no income coming in. Match day income is massive to clubs from the Championship down, and that's just been taken away. And so essentially there'll be very, very few sources of income. I mean, what do the broadcast companies do? Well, they certainly won't want to pay when they're getting no product. And again, they're going to have subscribers, you know, for coming to them and saying, well, you know, we're getting no football, why are we paying a monthly subscription? So that'll get passed on to the clubs. So, I mean, I asked one of the people involved in the talks whether there was, I mean, this should be a wake-up call for football, and maybe we should be looking at restructuring the season so that there is space for, you know, if something does go badly wrong, and also stop players getting run into the ground, maybe, you know, less teams in the divisions, you know, sort of shorter league seasons. So there is a bit of spare capacity in the year where if something goes wrong, you can actually fit more games in. And the person involved said to me, he said, well, that might happen naturally. He said, because there might be a significant number of clubs that cease to exist after this. And while, you know, you might look at it now and say, and you can say a lot of things that are being said at the moment seem like scaremongering, but there is more than a grain of truth in that, and that's a frightening prospect for quite a lot of smaller clubs across the country.
And just finally, Tony, I mean, we're just seeing that there's an emergency Premier League meeting that's scheduled for Thursday to discuss what happens with the rest of this season. And obviously the situation regarding coronavirus is an ongoing one that seems to be getting worse and worse, and it's going to be developing and changing over the days and weeks. But what do you think is going to happen in terms of sporting events? The Euros, we're expecting that to get pushed back next year, but that's not easy either, because then next year you go into other tournaments that kind of impedes on the qualifiers for World Cups. How do you think this next 12 months, considering this is a developing story, sports-wise, is going to manifest itself?
Well, I think we're going to have a very, very blank summer in terms of big sporting events, because most of them won't be played. I think the knock-on effect, I suspect they will play the end of the season, wherever happens. They'll get the 10 games out of the way and play a shorter football season next year. I think from UEFA's point of view, they're quite happy to push the Euros back till next year, and because it'll clash with the Club World Cup, extended Club World Cup, which incidentally to be held in China, 24 teams, and they'd quite like to kill that UEFA in their war with FIFA if they could. So I think we'll see that. I think we're into a period of real politicking, and I think it's going to be a very, very difficult time for sporting institutions, never mind football. I think this is unprecedented, and I think none of us can quite predict where it's going to end. I think I can say with some certainty that they will finish this year's league because of a sense of fairness. But after that, I think we could go in a number of directions, and you know, they're going to call off the Champions League on Tuesday as well. They probably won't play that. There'll be an asterisk there, you know, so no team will win it this year. So, but I have to say, at this moment.
Game day, your verdict on Talk Sport.
We're going to have a look at your team of the season so far. We've asked you to put this together. There really has been some star players this season, haven't there? And some positions are obviously harder than others. But what have you gone for in terms of formation?
So I've gone for 4-3-3.
Yeah.
But my three up top is not, you like, centre forward, wide left, wide right. Mine are like three where you've got an attacker behind the front two.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
Should we start a goalkeeper then?
So, goalkeeper, I've gone Dean Henderson. Okay. I think he's been brilliant. I mean, yeah. I think they're up there for clean sheets. And it was really close between Nick Pope, who's been fantastic to work as well, Dean Henderson and Raul Patricio. Now, the Raul Patricio one, I put him in there because I felt like I had to give Wolves a kind of get him in there somewhere because they've been brilliant. They're right up there in the league. They're a couple points off a fourth. They're right in with the mix, but for me, I had to go Dean Henderson. I think he's been sensational. I do think that whenever the next qualifier is, if it's any time soon, I think he's going to be in the mix to become number one.
Do you think he starts ahead of Pickford?
I think if you're going on current form, then you'd have to say him and Nick Pope are probably ahead of Pickford. But if you're going on, obviously, you know, experience, then how do you leave Pickford out? He's been number one. He was brilliant in the World Cup, done really, really well. So, and Gareth Southgate again trusts him. So how do you move on from him? So that's a difficult conversation and situation for Gareth Southgate to be in. And that's not the only position that he's got to worry about, to be fair.
And Henderson's given Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a lot to ponder, you know, I think, going forward.
I don't think they have. I think, if anything, he's helped Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I think, because now, obviously, there was a time where you'd go, if De Gea wasn't there, oh, what do we do now? It's you know what I mean? It's a case, state of emergency. Who's going to go and goal for us? But I think
Romero's not been a bad number two for them,
he's been okay, but De Gea was so far ahead of everybody. But I think now, I can honestly see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer looking at this situation again, where if someone comes in with a sizable bid for De Gea, probably let him go and let Henderson go back to Man United and become their number one. So I do really think that's a possibility.
Yeah, I agree with you on Henderson, actually. I really do. Let's go with your back four then. Who you got?
So right back, I've gone with Trent.
Yeah, I mean, can't be anyone else, can it?
No, I mean, you talk about his distribution and, I mean, his assist and the way he goes forward. I mean, at times, defensively, he can get caught out. And I think that's maybe where, well, not even maybe, Wan-Bissaka, for me, is probably the best one-to-one defender in the Premier League, and if not in world football. It seems impossible to get past him. And I do wonder, with England, if Wan-Bissaka is going to be in the squad. But if he's as well, if we're playing someone like, I don't know, Belgium and Hazard, who's on the left, does he play Wan-Bissaka or does he play Trent? Because I think that is something you have to seriously think about.
But what a great option to have, that
exactly.
You can bring him in
and
that situation.
And we've seen Southgate do that before with the fullbacks, where he changes them from game to game. So, but yeah, I've gone for Trent in this instance. I think he's been brilliant.
And obviously, centre-backs, I imagine Van Dijk's in there.
Yeah, obviously Virgil van Dijk speaks for itself. And Soyuncu is the other one as well at Leicester.
Okay,
I think
he's
been absolutely brilliant. I mean, I think he's even the quickest. Is he not recorded the quickest speed in the Premier League as well? So he's quicker than I thought. I thought he's defended really well. And I think he's really, I mean, Johnny Evans deserves a mention as well, because he's been fantastic alongside him. But for me, Soyuncu has just got the edge on him. And again, when you're giving out, obviously, honourable mentions, look, Chris Basham at Sheffield United, Jack O'Connell, been absolutely fantastic.
Put Maguire in there?
Not ahead of them two, no. No, I mean, Leicester are third in the table, fourth in the table, so they're up there for a reason.
And everyone wondered how they were going to replace him, and he was there already.
Exactly. So for me, Soyuncu he's got to be in there. And obviously my left-back's Robertson. Now, left-back was a bit of a toughie because Chilwell was fantastic, but he's kind of gone off a little bit. And Luke Shaw's come off to his own recently, but I think Robertson all season's been fantastic, so he's in there.
Who do you think has been Liverpool's best fullback this season? Trent or Robertson?
Trent, I think. Yeah. I think Trent. Every time,
just come into his own.
Every time he puts that ball into the box, it's with quality. Yeah. And every time he puts it in there, you think, where is someone? You've got to score that. And it's very rare you get a fullback or a wide player who puts in the ball with such quality so frequently. The last one I can think of is maybe David Beckham.
And he's just getting better and better, isn't he?
Exactly.
Midfield?
Holding midfield, I've gone for Ollie Norwood. And I think he's been absolutely sensational for Sheffield United. And when I said, a lot of people probably looked at other names and gone, no, how can they not have, you know what I mean, other people ahead of him? But when you think about what he does, the way Sheffield United play, he's so integral to the way they play. Because every time a fullback, or sorry, not a fullback, a centre half goes in an overlap, who's the one who just sits into that position? It's Ollie Norwood. And he covers so many ground. He starts off attacks. His distribution on the ball, for me, he's been, as a holding midfielder, he's been right up there. So that's why he's in my team in the season.
Okay, 8, 10, 89. Let us know if you agree or disagree with Darren on the holding midfielder of this season so far. Mm. Who else is in there?
The other two kind of speak to themselves, and I think these two are going to go head to head when it comes to the PFA Player of the Year, and that's Kevin De Bruyne and Jordan Henderson.
Who would you pick?
Me, I'm going to go Jordan Henderson. One, obviously, because I know him and he's a good friend of mine. But but secondly, I think we really fully appreciate him, because when he's not been there for Liverpool, I know he played in the game against Atletico, but before that, when they had that little ropey patch, he was. You could see that he wasn't there, and it really affected them. So for me, he's been brilliant this season. He runs his organisation, his leadership. I mean, he is their captain, and he's been absolutely sensational. So he has to be in there.
And they have realised, haven't they, when he's just not there, just how much they miss him this season.
Exactly. And it's not even from like a maybe even a footballing point of view. It's just him on the pitch, leader, obviously, organisation. Sometimes you need these characters in your dressing room, on the pitch. And as I said, he's been brilliant.
Everyone's starting to appreciate him now, do you think?
And it's unfair, because he's been...
Even England fans.
Exactly, and that's what... If I was him, and it annoys me a little bit, because why is it we appreciate him now? Because he hasn't been playing for the last couple of games. Like, we shouldn't have to wait till he gets an injury, and he's not there for us to start game. Well, you know what? That Jordan Henderson's a top player, because he's been a top player for many years. You don't captain an iconic side like Liverpool if you're no good.
We've had so many good forwards in the league so far this season, yeah, really shining and standing out for their team. So how have you narrowed this down?
So my front three, so I've got Mane in the hole, because I think he's been the best out of the three. I think maybe Salah's got more goals than him, but I'm sure if you ask most Liverpool fans this season who's been better out of the two, they'd definitely say Mane. He's so crucial to the way they play, goals, assists, how hard he works for the team. So he's in the hole. And up top, I've gone with Vardy and Aguero. Vardy, obviously, top goal scorer in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Didn't score for 9 games, but yet he's still sitting on 19 Premier League goals already, which is scary. I think he's 9-9 as well before he joins into the under club. And Aguero, obviously, speaks for itself.
Jimenez
is on my list, and I really wanted to put him in, but I couldn't put him ahead of any of them two. Aubameyang as well, he's been playing wide left. Deserves a thing, but I love Aubameyang, but if I had the choice out of Aubameyang or Aguero, I'm probably going to go Aguero.
Outside shout for Calvert-Lewin, maybe?
He's on the list, as much as that annoys one of the producers in there, that he doesn't like Calvert-Lewin, but I really rate Calvert-Lewin. But if you talk about with these guys all season, not quite yet, but the last 10 games, he's certainly up there. He's been fantastic, Calvert-Lewin. He's really staking his claim for getting in that England squad, whenever that may be.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of others that aren't in there that people might sort of pick out, who have had brilliant seasons. Obviously, you've already mentioned Mo Salah. You haven't put him in there. Mm-hmm. Grealish as well, perhaps. He's been such a star this season.
Yeah, but where'd you play him? Has he had a better season than Mane? No. Better than Vardy? Well, you can't put him centre forward, so you might as well take...
You could take Norwood out, maybe, and change your formation a bit, I don't know.
You think Grealish has been better than Ollie Norwood when Villa are sitting where they are and he's sitting where they are?
I just think in terms of actually solely carrying a team, and obviously I know they're not safe, they're, what, 3 points out of the relegation zone at the moment, but they'd be much bigger trouble without him in terms of one team relying on a player and him almost single-handedly carrying them through the season at times.
Yeah, listen, Jack...
And the way he's matured off the pitch, the way he's, you know, dealing with the whole package. He's obviously been criticised in the past for the way he's handled himself, he's coming into England contention as well.
He has been absolutely brilliant. But I just think Ollie Norwood's been... His team, Sheffield United, people would never say... They were one of the favourites to get relegated. And now they're sitting... Where are they? 6th or 7th in the Premier League. And he's played every game, Ollie Norwood. He's been absolutely magnificent. And if you talk about the other two going forward, Jordan Henderson, we've seen the impact, we spoke about it. And Kevin De Bruyne, I can't get him in there. And I know for Villa as well, he's been playing wide left. Well, he's never going to get in front of Mane. Not in that position.
I like the fact you've put Norwood in there, because there's so often unsung heroes, aren't there? Because they're not the forward positions and they don't get the credit that they deserve. So that's it then. That's Darren's team of this season so far. You've got Henderson, Alexander-Arnold, Van Dijk, Soyuncu, Robertson, Ollie Norwood's in there. He's gone for De Bruyne, Henderson, Mane and Vardy and Aguero up front.
Game day. Your verdict on Talk Sport.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Now, have a listen to this. TalkSport's very own former Chelsea defender Jason Cundy has gone back to his old stomping ground to catch up with current Blues defender Cesar Azpilicueta. So the Spanish international reveals a story behind his unique competitive nature, and he also gave Stuart a few bars of his Stamford Bridge initiation song.
Hi, I'm Jason Cundy. I'm in Surrey, in Cobham, at Chelsea's training ground, where I've come down to interview Chelsea's right-back, centre-back, left-back and current captain, Cesar Azpilicueta, also known as Dave. So when you first arrived, Chelsea fans kind of struggled to pronounce your second name, so they called you Dave instead. How about nowadays? Is it Cesar Azpilicueta, Aspi or Dave? How'd you like to be introduced?
Well, you know, people call me in different ways, but I think everybody knows already my name.
So when you first heard Dave, when the Chelsea fans called you Dave, what did you think of that?
Well, to be fair, it was the first time I was in an audience with the Spanish players at the time, Fernando Torres, Juan Mata, and Oriol Romeu, and I got the question by one fan, and you know, I couldn't imagine that could go that far, to be fair, but you know, it just, you know, some people are still in the street, they call me Dave.
And you answer to Dave?
I do.
So you worked, so no one wants to start off as a defender. You started off as a striker. Yeah. What were you like as a striker? Were you like Diego Costa? Diego Drogba? Who were you like?
Well, I don't think that level. That's why I went to be right back at the end. But yeah, when I was coming through the academy, I moved to right winger. And then I made my debut when I was 17 years old as a right winger. But then certainly a manager at the time, Cuco Ziganda, thought that I could be a good fit in the right back position, even if we had two at the time. And with 18 years old, I started playing regularly in La Liga as a right back.
So you have played every single position, pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much.
and tell us, there is a competitive side to you. I know, having spoke to a lot of the other Chelsea players, they actually say you are the most competitive player they've ever come up against. Where's that come from?
I don't know. It's the way I am, and you know, sometimes even when I am off the pitch and I am playing some games, you know, whatever it is, I want to win. And that competitive side of me, it's something that the day I lose this, I think it's not a good sign.
You like that at home?
Yeah.
You competitive with the family kids?
Now the only time I let my daughter or my son win games. Yeah. Even my wife has to tell me, hey.
I've got a picture of you in the garden going tackling your kids.
Not that level.
So there's always an initiation when you come to Chelsea, right? What did you have to do?
I had to sing the night before the Super Cup final in Monaco.
And what did you sing?
I think I sang that bad that we didn't win that game.
What did you sing?
I just introduced myself and I sang a Spanish song. But, you know.
Do you want to give us a quick rendition now? Just give us a quick go.
Por la raja de tu falda. That's from a group.
What's not to love? So when you came to Chelsea, of course, there were some big players. Didier had left. Ashley Cole was there. Petr Cech. Frank Lampard, your gaffer. John Terry. And you were the younger lad. What was that like coming into that dressing room?
Well, obviously, when you start looking around and you see that big players around, you know, I just try to learn from them, to have the chance to be with them on the pitch and to train hard as I could, because I knew that the level was so high, and if I wanted to be successful, I had to be at my best every day.
So your best every day, what is your best position? Because you played right back, you played centre-half, you played left back, because of course you took Ashley Cole's position initially. Mm. Jose put you there, and Antonio Conte played you right side of a three. Where do you prefer?
I don't mind, to be fair. I love to play, you know, and I had this characteristic on me since, you know, I arrived and I played in different positions. Always I try to be available for the manager in whenever he thinks that needs me for the team. And I just try to enjoy and to learn, because every time that change comes, I try to improve and to learn from different positions.
Now, of course, Frank Lampard was a teammate of yours. He's now the gaffer. John Terry was a teammate of yours. He's now assistant manager Aston Villa at the weekend. Is that going to be a bit weird?
Yeah, you know, it's the cycle of football, you know. At the beginning, it's a bit, you know, different, because we share the dressing room, but now it's, you know, the life carries on. And we know that we are not going to be footballers for the whole life, so the new positions that now, you know, the former players they take, in that case, Frank and John, now they are, you know.
Is it weird, though, having Frank as your gaffer now, or is it just something you just adapt to?
No, it's fine, isn't it? Adapt quick, yeah.
You never fell out with him when you were players?
No. Never as a... No, we had a good relationship. Teammates always, you know, no problem at all. And now he's the manager and, you know, he's... I take it completely natural.
But Abraham goes for goal himself and scores!
And neatly dispossessed by Fikayo Tomori. Does not look out of place whatsoever for Chelsea.
No, he's looked very calm and composed.
Fantastic cross. It's turned in by Pulisic. And Chelsea lead by 2-0.
Since Frank has come in, there's been 8 debutants, and not including Tammy and Tomori. What has it been like as now the older player? And you must...
One of the oldest. Not the older. I'm still 30.
But when you've got someone like Billy Gilmour coming who could be your son. What's that like for you?
That is, you know, it's another experience and a great responsibility as well to lead the boys that they are coming through to, you know, we know that they have been working so hard in the academy on loans. And we know that we have one of the most successful academies in the world. So now this year they have had a lot of chances. They are taking them, and it's very pleasant to see the boys doing well, because, you know, we have a great and bright future ahead of us.
Mane trying to burst into the penalty area, and Billy Gilmour goes across, steps in front of him and brings the ball out towards this near side.
I mean, he's been absolutely outstanding.
Billy Esther is what they're calling him now, and he played within the... I don't want to put too much pressure on his shoulders, but he is really quite a special player, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. To have the two performances that he has had in the last two games, and the personality that he has shown on the pitch is big, but we know that he's still 18 and he has a great career ahead of him, hopefully, and you know, the way he's working, I'm sure that he will do really well and he will keep improving, because we cannot think that at 18 he has reached his potential. So, you know, big things coming up.
Game day, your verdict on Talk Sport.
Let's speak to Richard Foster, who is a football writer with The Guardian and author of the book Premier League Nuggets. And he joins us on the line now. He's a football historian. And what we wanted to talk to Richard about was has this ever happened before? Because we're pretty clear that it hasn't ever happened before. But are there any other situations that we can draw comparisons from? Hello, Richard.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on the programme today. Let's talk a little bit then about precedents and where we are, because the suspension or the cancelling of leagues, if we go back to the 1930s or even before that, the 1940s, sort of 14 to 19 period, where two wars stopped football in this country on a professional basis. I take it they didn't get to the end of a season there. So what happened?
Well, actually, in World War One, when the season started, war was declared shortly afterwards, and the belief was that, as you probably remember, they all said, oh, the war will be over by Christmas. So they continued to play the season, and then it kept going, and actually, by the end of the season, they suddenly realised that this war wasn't going to be over so quickly.
So they played all the way through a season?
Yep. So 1914, 1915 continued, and then they suspended it and they didn't come back. So what they did is they turned it into regional competitions, and there was still football being played, but it was obviously a fairly minor part because most of the footballers would then be needed for national service. There were quite a few charity games played, and actually, if you remember, women's football started because women were used in the munitions factories.
They got big crowds as well, didn't they?
They started playing, and you've probably heard of Dick Kerr's ladies' team. That's when it began. And they're incredibly popular at the time until the FA decided in their wisdom to ban it in 1921, so women's football was stopped.
Very strange decision, that, wasn't it?
Richard, is that where the rivalry between Spurs and Arsenal started?
Well, there's certain precedents here because, as you remember, in that season, just for the 1914-15 season, Chelsea and actually Tottenham had finished last and they were about to be relegated when obviously the whole thing was suspended. But there was an issue with apparently a Man United-Liverpool game when Man United was about to get relegated possibly. There was a bit of a, what shall we call it, a fix. And Man United won 2-0, and it came out later that it had actually been a fixed game. And Chelsea and Tottenham complained about it. Arsenal had finished actually sixth in Division 2. But in the end, Arsenal got elected to Division 1, and Chelsea and Tottenham stayed in Division 1. So Arsenal are the only teams who have got promoted without actually gaining promotion via the league. And that was obviously the start of some problems, but they did then continue, as you know, Perry, they've had 100 years continuous membership at the top division.
Richard, which hasn't stopped telling us all day when we started discussing
this. So Arsenal have never been promoted and never been relegated. Was there a few palms crossed with silver, do you think?
Were there a few, what, sorry?
Palms crossed with silver.
Did they buy their way in, is what he's asking.
I would hesitate to say that, obviously, but
that's,
you know,
the rumour, though, isn't it?
Influences going on in the Football League management. The other interesting thing is about, you know, talking about World War One, World War Two, suspending football. During World War One, Tottenham had to play at Highbury because White Hart Lane was out of action. In World War Two, Highbury was out of action because it was being used for various wartime efforts. So they had to go and play at White Hart Lane. So that probably also exacerbated the Tottenham-Arsenal rivalry.
Yeah, because it didn't get nasty until about 1921, from what I was reading earlier on. In World War Two, then, when was the outbreak of war? I mean, sorry, my history isn't great, but did it come in the middle of a season?
September 1939.
So as a result of that, the football season would probably only have been about four games, five games old.
Exactly right, yeah. So they immediately called a halt to it, and they actually then turned it into regional leagues. So they kept playing football, and there were eight regional leagues, which were then reduced to two regional leagues the following year, because again, the FA and the league, the Football League used to meet every year to see what was going on during the Second World War, and clearly they couldn't bring it back because most of the players, again, were going to be eligible for national service. So, it was eight regional leagues turned to two regional leagues. I will point this out, that in 1941, Crystal Palace won the Southern Regional League. So there's another notch in our bedpost of amazing honours that we've cracked on with since 1905.
So, Richard, what happened, obviously, when the war finished in 1945?
Yep.
When did they start the football leagues again, and how did they structure it? Who did they decide who went where? And what would you do at this particular time, the situation we're in now?
Yeah, I mean, they basically reinstituted the FA Cup, which had been stopped in 1945-96. The league season restarted in 1946-47, and they basically went back to what it was in that 1939-1945 season. So, as Sam points out, there have only been, I think there were three or four games that had only been played. So it was not similar to the position now, where we're three quarters of the way through the season. So they just wiped out 1939, 1945, and started again 1946, 1947.
As a playoff expert, and I say this because one of your other books is about the history of the fabulous world of football playoffs and how we've, over the last 25 years, really sort of come to appreciate and love the playoffs. I think when it first was muted, I don't think people were as interested as they are now. But now it's like, the cracking way to end the Football League season. Is there any sort of, in your mind, any way of finishing the season slightly differently with a sort of playoff system, or would you? How would you advocate doing it now? I mean, you mentioned the historical precedents, and there aren't really any.
I'm a big fan of the playoffs, but the playoffs that we have for the Football League, you know, are predetermined. We've got them. We know what's going to happen. I know a few people complained about them, saying, you know, a sixth team shouldn't go up instead of a third place team, but the rules are set and they've been set for a long time, so you know exactly where you need to finish to get automatic promotion. On for the situation we have now, I think that would be really difficult. Who are you going to qualify for Europe playoffs if you're within 10 points or within four places? And similarly with relegation, do you go up to, you know, obviously you've got the three currently in the relegation slots, you've got three or four above them, how far do you go up? Do you go to Southampton, who are, you know, 9 points clear or whatever it might be? I think it would be difficult. I mean, it would be extraordinary and there would be some fantastic games, but I don't think I can see that being organised. I can't see the clubs agreeing to that because, as I say, where do you draw the line?
What do you think will happen then?
What I think will happen, and the most sensible option, is they will keep the suspension going for as long as possible. As you point out, we've got the UEFA meeting on Tuesday. I think I can see the Euros being suspended. We use that time to finish off the season. If still the ban on playing football live continues beyond June, then we do have an issue. But I just think we have to finish this season. And whether that runs into July, August, September, I just think it's the credibility of the whole league would be shot to pieces unless we finish the season. Only been a quarter way through, I can see why you'd abandon it.
Yeah.
But we are very close to it. As you say, there are only 10 or 9 games left in the Premier League and similar in the Football League. We have to finish it off, otherwise I just say, you know, the credibility is gone.
Game Day, your verdict on Talk Sport.
Okay, earlier this week, TalkSport's Jeff Peters sat down with Leicester City goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel, and they spoke about Jamie Vardy, his goalkeeping idols, and a manager that clearly has had a huge influence on him, Nigel Pearson.
Nigel was a huge influence on me. He was a manager who really gave me stability in my career, having been, you know, around all sorts of clubs everywhere. To come in to a club and Sven getting sacked after, I think it was 12 games, to then think, oh, right, what we're going to do now again with, you know, a new manager. To come in and again, man management, I keep saying it, it's such an underrated quality in football.
Leicester City are the Premier League champions of 2015 and 16.
We still reap the rewards of the foundations that he built at this club. You know, the title season was built on his foundations, and we have, I think Leicester City has a lot to thank Nigel for.
And Jamie Vardy has just speared one in at the near post past Pepe Reina.
Jamie Vardy is closing in on 100 Premier League goals. Can you give us an insight on what he's like as a striker and as a teammate, and just having him around the place?
Only 100? It's about time. No, he... Again, his story, his journey has been exceptional. He's a ruthless striker. You know, he has this incredible ability to just switch it on in games. Training, not as much. Don't want to be on his team sometimes. No, you can really just tell he knows where to be. He's become, you know, very clever in his movements as well. but he still has that raw blistering speed, and he just has a predatory instinct of knowing where to be. And then most importantly of all, when you know where to be, you have to finish it, and he does that every single time.
The best or most important save that you've made in your career, which one would stand out most?
Wow. I think in the Champions League season, obviously in the Premier League winning season, there are important moments in games, maybe Tottenham away, a one-on-one save from Harry Kane where it managed to get it onto the bar.
Oh, what a save! Kasper Schmeichel!
Again, not really like what you'd call maybe a great save, but in the context of the game and in the context of the whole season, a really, really important save.
Who were your favourite keepers growing up and what made them stand out for you?
I had so many, honestly. I mean, the obvious one being my dad, obviously watching him a lot, but I was so lucky playing with so many good goalkeepers and being able to see them close up. You know, after my dad finished at Man City, David Seaman came, David James, you know, you had your Nicky Weaver, Joe Hart, Shea Givens. I mean, so many that I could mention. I looked at a lot of keepers that were kind of my stature, my size. I was a massive fan of Iker Casillas, loved Oliver Kahn, Santiago Cañizares was obviously huge, Buffon. Just so many to mention. I used to look and study, you know, every single day. I used to study keepers and see how they trained, how they played, little elements of their game maybe that they could, that could improve my game. And I still do to this day. Luckily, back in those days, it was videos and DVDs and you know, clubs sharing DVDs and things like that, and then YouTube came in, and then now we have all these scouting apps and all these things that are brilliant that make these things much more readily available. But I always, when I watch games, I look at goalkeepers and I see what they do and see if there's anything that I can maybe use from what they're doing to try and improve my game. And I think that's been probably the most important thing in my career, is constantly feeling like I'm evolving, constantly wanting to learn.
Which outfield player at Leicester do you think most fancies himself as a decent keeper?
Every single one of them. They all think they can. They all get in there and try, and then it looks as awkward as can be. Vards does fancy himself. Mark Albrighton loves going in goal. He's horrendous. It is quite fun to watch sometimes, you know, when training's finished and one of them goes, "Oh, go on, give me your gloves," and then you go in and you get a good giggle at them. And yeah, I think probably Vard. He's probably the one he fancies himself the most.
Game day, your verdict on Talk Sport.
So we thought today, because Max Rushton was just suggesting that perhaps we wouldn't have anything to talk about, so instead of reading mean tweets, we decided to do one of his other suggestions, which is first dates with Stuart Pearce. So here we go. Right, what would you wear to your first date, Stuart?
Casual, something very casual. Ah. I'm just maybe a pair of jeans, just ease down a little bit. Probably not this shirt with the stick it's had today, but even though that doesn't normally put me off.
People have been berating your shirt. I'll just describe it. It's brown with pinstripe on it. It's as good as it sounds.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Who bought that shirt for you? Sorry.
I think it was a personal acquisition, actually. Oh, I don't know.
It's lovely.
Might have been. Thank you. It's okay. Listen, I'm renowned for my poor fashion. I sort of try to live up to it.
Luckily, you've got other talents, so don't worry about that. Where would you go, Stuart? Where would you take your date?
I think a meal. Followed by a gig, because anyone that loves me has got to love the Stranglers as well. So we'd end up at Brixton Academy, you know what I mean? And I'd probably flush her out a little bit. Can she muck in or not, you know? So 5,000 people at Brixton Academy, with a little bit of push and shove and a sticky floor, I'd have to find out about her, you know? There's no point. I'm not one of these ivory towers, you know, best behaviour type things. Whilst my manners are very good, you know, you've got to meet the Stranglers and love the Stranglers as well as me. It's like taking me and my children on. They are my children.
I mean, that's a completely different topic of conversation, isn't it?
It is.
Right, so what about, well, you mentioned food. Who orders?
I'd probably flush her out a little bit. So soup to start with, just to see whether there's a slurper on my hands or not, you know? And then after that, corner of the cob and spare rib. What are her eating habits like, you know? It's going to put her under real, real pressure. I know, horrible. When it arrives spare ribs, you think, oh my God, you know? And she said, are you not going to join me on the spare ribs? And I said, no, anything that gets me fingers dirty, I'm not a lover of eating, so... I think that would be fair dinkum.
We've jumped ahead a few phases here, haven't we?
Do you know what? I actually... I eat spare ribs with a knife and fork. That's weird, isn't
Listen,
it?
Listen, I've seen you eat, Woodsy. Yes. You know what I mean? Don't do it on your first date, honestly. You're doing yourself no favours whatsoever.
The most difficult version of when you've seen me eat is definitely when we're in Old Trafford and there's no space in the
it's tight in there, isn't it? I know.
And I've bought something from home which I pre-prepared. I've opened it up and it's absolutely horrible.
You do eat the smelliest food I've ever known, though. Your homemade stuff, then I'll stink.
It's supposed to be healthy, isn't it?
It's supposed to be, yeah.
If this was a date, wouldn't be going very well, would it? Red wine or white wine?
I don't drink, so whatever the individual.
But what about for her? Problem. Whatever she chooses, right? What
exactly that? Yeah. Maybe a nice prosecco, something like that. But say I don't drink, so I'm a good date. I can drive, you know.
I'm not fussy, so pretty much anything. I'll drink whatever I'm given. Flowers or chocolate? So when you arrive, what would you bring them?
I think I'd bring flowers, definitely, but I've got a sweet tooth and I like my chocolate, as you know.
Well, I do, but you also like your shortbread.
Yeah. Well, maybe flowers or shortbread then.
There we go.
Be an unusual one. You'll like shortbread.
I'd love it. What's your best chat-up line, Stuart?
Listen, I don't really go... I wear people down more than a one-off line, to be fair, you know?
Just constant messaging.
Yeah, exactly.
You haven't replied to my last five. Just checking you're all right. Are you still there?
Yeah, I've still got a pulse there, you know.
I love this. So basically, I think he's
taking an interest in somebody. Nice. You know what I mean? Don't turn up and talk about yourself. I don't want to talk about myself. It's all about you, really, you know?
This is why I'm excellent on dates, because I'm so used to getting conversation about whoever I'm next to. Like today, we've just been talking about you and I've been loving it. Not just about you, obviously about football and stuff like that, but this is why I'm actually quite good on a date, because I equally don't like talking about myself. That's a lie, isn't it? No, I genuinely don't. But that's a nice one. I like that. So try and get as much information out of them as possible. Yeah. But I have no doubt that there's an alternative agenda in here that you're also sizing them up, like you've done with the food, like you've done with whether or not they can handle a gig or not.
Yeah, I think you find out a bit about their personality a little bit. Rather than go, oh, we can always pop to a lovely restaurant in London or whatever. I don't live in those worlds, to be fair, would you? You know, I'm sort of more of a spit and sawdust type individual.
Absolutely. Who pays for the bill?
Me, definitely.
Really?
Yeah, what? I'm old-fashioned like that. Whether you call it old-fashioned or not, I will offer to pay for the bill.
What if she was one of these modern women and she said, no, look, I own my own money, I can do this, I want to pay for the bill. Would you let her?
Yes, of course.
See, that's lovely,
you know,
isn't
I certainly wouldn't go against that. I would offer to pay for the bill if someone turned around and said, no, honestly, I'd much rather pay my own way or the whole bill. I wouldn't stand against that either.
Any horror stories? So when you were a little bit younger, because I know you're betrothed now, any horror stories about dates? Any ones that didn't go very well?
Wait, really?
Oh, hang on. I think you're leaning on the mute button there.
Am I?
You've just self-muted yourself.
Ooh.
I wish you lot had heard that.
Is that
it? Back. You're back. Don't worry. You're
excellent.
Back. Yeah, you just...
Probably the best thing.
Muted yourself for a couple of things there. That was a great story, though. Sad that you lot didn't hear
Thanks.
That.
Thanks. Yeah, nothing springs to mind, to be quite honest with you. You know what I mean? I'm sure...
That usually means that the horror's been on the other side of the table.
Exactly. That probably has. I've just not seen it. I'm that bullish. I just haven't seen it.
You do have an interesting summer coming up, though, don't you?
I don't know.
An interesting summer for your own love life?
Ah, yes, getting married in May, which is lovely.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, obviously, there's lots of things that could be postponed and all that sort of stuff, but I imagine you're the sort of guy, like you've just said, that it doesn't really matter, because your wedding will just be about you guys, and it doesn't matter whether it's a big flush event or just something between the two of you, right?
Yeah, something a little bit more low-key and rustic is more... In our point of view, I think.
See, this is the great thing about not having any football on us. We're learning these things about Stuart Pearce that you'd never know before. You'd never know that he's an old romantic. You'd never know that he is a shortbread and flowers kind of guy. And you'd never know that he makes his dates eat spare ribs.
Soup.
And what was the other one?
Corner of a cob.
That's just mean, isn't it? Absolutely mean. Thank you very much. That was First Dates with Stuart Pearce.
Game Day. The biggest football league in the world. Game Day. Your verdict on Talk Sport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.